put in for me. Started making you to start with the wrong folks. our stature ride with the young lion on my left hand side to introduce yourself and tell us where in which province are you coming from, which organization do you belong to, and your name first and your surname. Thank you. There is a recording in front of you.
Thank you, Professor. My name is Stella Tembi Sangabeni. I represent the African National Congress. I come from the province of the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
And I skip a little bit there. Let you, are you a member, say, with a pink stripe BE suit?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Joe Matua. I'm a member. I'm also a member of the Independent Democrats, and I'm from the Northwest Province. And without trying to intimidate you, it is where Eugene de Blanc comes from.
Thank you, Joe. Next to Joe, then.
Don't leave. Even not this committee chairperson, welcome to you there. Nice to be there.
Thank you, Donald. Next to Donald.
I'm Jacob van der Linde from the DA. I'm from Public Race, the Central Karoo. Always been involved in sport.
Thank you, Mr. Van der
Linde.
I can see your ears. they have some intended, unintended questions. And all our members. Members that I'm very familiar to, I'll call them honorable members, pardon me. With Donald Lee, I just call him like that, but he's an honorable member. The rules dictate that you call members honorable members, but it depends again to the extent that you are close to a person. Cedric, I call him Cedric, but he's an honorable member. So that is the kind of thing. It is not a hard, fast rule, but at least you must use most of the time honorable members. Are you a member? Go for it. Okay. Thanks. I know you're an honorable member.
Okay, I'm McKenzie from CUP. I'm from Durban, KwaZulu-Natal, and executive member of the KZNRU.
McKenzie.
I'm Conrad Zikashi from the ANC in the Benin province.
Okay. The beautiful province.
It is called from the ANC for the association state. We need a lot of politicians in direction this time around.
Yeah. Is there a member on my right hand side? No names. Right next to me here is Pori. Mr. Pori. Mr. Pori is a committee secretary. The minutes and the notices for the committee and the venue and the all other things, the water. This is the man who organizes all those other things. And the errors in the minutes that are not good. Sorry, it's to blame. But the political context, I am to blame. But in as far as grammar, I don't deal with grammar. It's for who's dealing with grammar. And next to me on my right hand side here, we're having this lady called Lindy. Lindy is a parliamentary liaison officer of the minister, the ministry. So Lindy is a Lindy. You see her sitting down and noting all these other things. The next thing you get a phone from the minister, I hear that you're discussing this thing and all that. It's Lindy who always go and feed minister with information. So instead of a parliamentary liaison officer and we must send a messenger, she's a messenger of news from our committee to the minister. And the gentleman sitting right at the, on that back here, are you a committee secretary? Most my name.
what has been here is now become a finisher in this institution. It's a committee. The beautiful lady right at the corner there is a now the man in charge of the whole institution now, but he's still a whip of this committee. So if you don't see things going right into the house, he's the man who's causing chaos there. So I think this is to be great. The man with the track suit is a Sandila Pamford, who's talking about that. We have one more call. The staff member for committee. Let me see, Thomas. Joe, yeah. Right next to Honorable Joe, there is that young gentleman there. Mpumza Pakama, what's my boy? That's your Pumza, you Pakama. Yeah. Mpumza, that is his name. Mpumza is the research for the sports and recreation. If things are not researched properly, taking some of the things that you don't know, you must know it is the extent of education and research that you got from the university. His honors degree contains that kind of a level of research that you are going to see. So it is not us, but I hear that people are doing research, I hear the masters and honors, and the honor members are only honorable. But if the extent of research is not honorable, members are going to be honorable, and then the men with the masters and honors in a big trouble there. And next to Mpumza there is also a committee secretary for education, sports and recreation in some other instances. But now I don't know whether it's going to be higher education or general education, and then I don't know what it's going to be. But it's a committee secretary for then Comrade Maya Tula for education. I don't know. Right at the back is a beautiful lady there. Zuki Pakambakmonban is in the PSHR. You see, she's smiling very nice. I don't want anybody to visit me in my office, including Paul. She is my PA. It's Zuki. So if I'm not there, Zuki's number is 3138, the extension. Please don't phone when you don't want anything. 3138. If any other thing that you want, honorable members, you struggle, you get information from the department or any other thing. If I'm not there, just phone 3138, you'll get Zuki, and then Zuki is going to help you, definitely, I'm sure. Young man, come.
My name is Modise Kavidi. I'm with the Parameter Communication.
Okay.
What's
next to Modise there, where are you? What estate?
Sorry, I work for NGO, Parliament Monitoring Group. Sorry, I'll shut
up. Oh, CMG. See, there is another, you'll see when you leave this meeting today, in 2 days' time, when you look at the ITC, there's huge news running there from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, and then they'll be telling the world of what is happening here. So that one is beyond our control. At the time, they inform correctly. At times, they just inform before we adopt those minutes, but it is their prerogative. So we've been working very well with the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, so I hope we work very well with you. Baba, have a good amount of the last problem.
From the
section
of
finance. Oh, thank you. Oh, that is why today these things are waiting, because you are here. Oh, that's good. So I think that I've tried to introduce almost everybody, honorable members, unless there's somebody that I've not introduced. But I'm introducing now the Director General for the Department of Sports and Recreation. It's Zeli Peterson. Zeli is the DJ, and then I will ask Zeli to introduce to us the entourage, including drug-free. You must also introduce drug-free, all of them, DJ. Mike,
good morning, honorable. Congratulations to all of you who made it back to Parliament and for having chosen on this committee. One of the most interesting and busy committees in the leadership of the panel. Except that last time I remember, I was very too defiant. But it's communicating something completely different. Jefferson, yes, thank you. I'm here with two of my colleagues in the department. Adira Macheco is sitting with the scientific support, and today generally to South African Institute for Drug Support, and then also I have the director, Mr. Tomo, who is responsible for the science.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and honorable members. Pleasure to be back for this committee. We've always had enormous support from this committee, and congratulations to all of you on coming back. And we hope we have a vibrant discussion as we've had in previous committee meetings. I'm the chairman of the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport. On my right is Mr. Khalid Khalant, who is the chief executive officer of the Institute. Next to him is Mr. Bugi Saban, who's the chief financial, who operates as the chief financial officer. He's independent, doesn't work for us, but works in a consultant capacity as the chief financial officer. And next to him is Mr. Fahmi Khalant, no relationship to Khalid Khalant, who is the general manager of Global Control Services at the Institute for Drug Free Sport.
And Dr.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to congratulate you as a member of the committee. And secondly, I would like to say it has never been the intention of both FIFA to take the over the conversation started, including the chairperson. Really, if that has been what you've been talking about, I'd like to apologize for that. It has never been our intention to do so. On my left, I have Mr. Petro Sodo, board member of Office for our people. On the left of Mr. Petro Sodo, we have our acting CEO, Mr. Luis Ongia. Far left is a board member, Mr. Claude Bashade. And right directly from KZN, Mr. Sodo is from the Eastern Cape. And right across Mr. Aji Jonas from the Free State.
My problem.
And thank you, Chairperson, for all the members I have.
Thank you, Chairman, you've just arrived. Can you introduce yourself?
I am the partner from India, Alvaro Gerardo.
Usually,
I
you see what has you caused in Geneva. Now you have to shut you up and down because of you. Honourable members, we are going to take the doctor from drug free. We're going to take drug free first to present here. I think, Doctor, we have attempted you and the committee two times to table this annual report before the end of last year, even before we went to the election. So it was really impossible on our side. But I remember you as being not having good extension of words the other time, but it was a bad communication problem. But we are going to take that place first. But the other thing that we want to you to brief us on top of this report is the extent of drug-free involvement on the Confederation and the 2010. And whether are you using the institute in Tunisia or you're using our own South African institute for the whole work of the Confederation and the 2010, or are you sharing that kind of way? Because I think we have the capacity as far as our institution is concerned to can carry the load of the 2010 and the load for the Confederation, and even try to help other countries that do not have the competence that we have. We'll thank you to go through first, just brief us your role in as far as the Confederation and the doping and meaning of the Confederation. And thereafter, you put us through to your annual report so that the members can interact with that.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. As far as the Confederations Cup and the World Cup is concerned, and I will deal with them together because I think they, tournaments that are run by the same association, namely FIFA. The position of FIFA is that the World Cup is a FIFA tournament. It's not a South African tournament, it's a FIFA tournament. South Africa is merely a host of the tournament. And FIFA's position to the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport is that FIFA is responsible for doping control at the World Cup and the Confederation Cup. And all responsibility, all logistics would be decided by FIFA and would be managed by FIFA. So that's the primary position that FIFA has come to us with. We've volunteered our services. We've volunteered to manage the entire process, but FIFA has their own processes which they wanted to institute. And we had to give into that because at the end of the day, it was FIFA's tournament. The extent of the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport involvement in both the Confederation Cup and the World Cup is firstly the South African laboratory, the South African Doping Control Laboratory based in Bloemfontein will be used as the testing center for the analysis or analytical center for all samples taken at the World Cup and the Confederation Cup. Secondly, the primary doping control officers will come from FIFA. FIFA will appoint their own doctors as doping control officers. But doctors from the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport will serve as assistant doping control officers to the FIFA doctors. So we will play a secondary role. The third role that the Institute for Drug Free Sport will play is that many of our existing doping control officers, and that's because FIFA requires doping control officers to be doctors, which is different from most other national conventions. So our existing doping control officers who are not doctors will serve as chaperones for the tournament for doping control. So that's largely the extent of our involvement. We've also done the training for the doctors for the World Cup because we didn't have sufficient doctors in our pool of doping control officers, so we had training sessions which were hosted by ourselves and FIFA to train doctors in becoming doping control officers. The chairperson, that's the extent of our involvement, and our doping control officers and our doctors who are in train as doping control officers will be operating both at the Confederation Cup and the FIFA World Cup.
Thank you, Doctor.
message of the laboratory dealing with those testing and what are for also benefits?
They've got, FIFA's got a direct contract with the laboratory. FIFA's also got a direct contract with a courier agency which transports the samples. And all the costs will be borne by FIFA.
Thank you, Dr.
The only cost that we've borne as far as the World Cup and the Confederation Cup is concerned is that we've contributed to the training cost.
Thank you. Honourable, short and precise role that you're going to play. There's no question, just go straight to your annual report.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I apologize that you're ready to present our 2008-2009 report, and here I am presenting our 2007-2008 report. That's because we've had two aborted attempts at presenting this report, and the last time we came to present our report and members of the committee did not have the requisite reports in front of them, had not read them, and therefore we couldn't present them. But yeah, I am here today presenting our report. Now, I want to begin because I think there's many new members of this committee, and if you allow me, Chairperson, to basically give you three slides introducing the South African Institute of Geography report for the benefit of those who are new, so that you understand where we come from and what we do, and why you give us the little money you do. The South African Institute for Geography Sport was established in 1997, as an Act of Parliament, the South African Institute for Geography Sport Act of 1997. And it arose out of the vision that Sports Minister at that time, Steve Shweta, had that South Africa needed to establish an anti-doping agency. Subsequent ministers, Balfour and current Minister Sofile, have given us unqualified support as far as the Institute for Geography Sport is concerned. We receive 80% of our funding from the Department of Sport and Recreation, and the current 80%. And we're clearly pushing Mr. Peterson to try and increase that support to us because of reasons I'll give in a couple of minutes' time. So we receive 80% of our funding from the Department of Sport and Recreation, and we raise the additional 20%. All major national and international sports competitions in South Africa have to comply with the rules of the South African Institute for Geography Sport. So we've got a set of anti-doping rules which are compliant with the World Anti-Doping Agency rules. And all South African sports national federations have to comply with these rules. And we give these rules to all of the national federations every year. And we've got a few copies available should anybody be interested. Just as some background information, the overarching institution which looks after anti-doping in the world is called the World Anti-Doping Agency. But because the World Anti-Doping Agency is a non-governmental organization, for the government to adopt the rules of the World Anti-Doping Agency or the World Anti-Doping Code as it is called, they needed to create an instrument, and the instrument is the UNESCO Convention. The UNESCO Convention essentially is a World Anti-Doping Code. And because UNESCO has the authority it has, South African government can adopt the UNESCO Convention. So we've got the World Anti-Doping Code and we've got the UNESCO Convention, both of which are very similar, and our code is compliant with both of them. Any national federation which is non-compliant with the World Anti-Doping Code or the rules of the South African Institute for Geography Sport has a potential loss of funding, inability to award South African colours, and the revocation and suspension of national and international membership. The mission of the agency is to detect, to deter, and to prevent the use of prohibited substances and methods in the South African sport and international sporting environment, which are contrary to the principles of fair play and the health and well-being of athletes. So our primary mission is to ensure fair play, to ensure that all competitors compete on a level playing field. That some do not have an unfair advantage through the use of doping substances and methods. As far as corporate governance of the Institute is concerned, we have a board of directors which is appointed by the minister every 4 years. And this is the third board of the South African Institute for Geography Sport. The current board is myself as the chairperson, Mr. Chris Hutting and Mr. Raymond Hack. And I've got those three is because they are serving, they've been reappointed after the last term that they've served. Dr. Ismail Zakut and Victor Ramasasele serve on the first board of the institute there, so they're also returning to the board for the second term. And the additional new board members are Professor John Ojiwoli from the University of KwaZulu-Natal, Dr. Harold Adams, Dr. Devin Gokwana, who is also the chairperson of the Health Portfolio Committee in Parliament, Ms. Nomvuliso Ntanjana, who is a lawyer who works in Pretoria for one of the government agencies, and Dr. Mamisa Kabulan Kaweni, who unfortunately, due to other work commitments, resigned from the board after her appointment. So currently we have 9 board members, all of whom are appointed by the Minister of Sport in consultation with the Olympic Committee. We've got 4 full-time staff, and we are one of the smallest agencies in the world. Some agencies, such as the Australian agency, has over 50 staff. And for the number of staff we have, we do a significant number of tests compared to other agencies in the world, and I'll come to that in a moment. Mr. Khalid Khaland, who's on my right, is the Chief Executive Officer. Mr. Fahmi Khaland is the Manager of Doping Control. Ms. Mbali Khadebe is the Project Officer. And Ms. Pamela Ilyx is the Administrator. Over and above the full-time staff that we have in the office, we have 53 doping control officers all around the country who do the primary doping control at sporting events. They work as volunteers and are paid an honorarium. We have 53 chaperones, and from the 53 doping control officers we have appointed 5 regional coordinators who coordinate the work that the other doping control officers do in each of their provinces. As far as our audit report is concerned, the audit is performed by the Auditor General. We had a revenue of 6.3 million rand. Of that money, 5.2 million rand came from directly from the Department of Sport and Recreation, and 1.169 million rand was raised through services we provide to national federations, to international federations, and under other sponsorships which we've derived through our own efforts. We, as always, have had an unqualified audit report, and we're proud of that record that we've had before the committee. The financial statements submitted for audit were not subject to any material amendments resulting from the audit. There were no financial irregularities or wasteful expenditure. The Auditor General did point out certain areas for improvement which we have worked on subsequently, and you'll not find it in our 2008-2009 report, namely that governance matters, we needed better compliance with treasury regulations. As far as risk management and supply chain management is concerned, we needed to appoint an internal audit committee, and we needed more information on performance information and performance management. As all of you are aware, honorable members, the Auditor General is placing greater emphasis on performance auditing as well as financial auditing, so that's an area that we need to look at. The other challenge we have from the Auditor General is that, you know, an agency the size of ours, I mean, our audit fees cost us about 400 to 500,000. And to me, that is unacceptably high for an agency as small as ours. And the way they audit us is the same they would audit Eskom or the SABC. And unfortunately, that's putting severe financial constraints on us, and it's something that we want to look at, and I bring it to this committee for discussion. As far as our expenditure is concerned, 40% of our expenditure is on administration, and as you can imagine, that being a legal process, doping control has huge administrative burdens, and therefore 40% and obviously the staff. So 40% of our costs are for administration, 6% is for education, and we're not happy about that. We need greater awareness in education, and we need to increase that from 6% to at least 10% for education purposes. And the doping control costs are 66% of our cost, which is 4.3 million rand. Doping control statistics, we perform nearly 3,000 tests per annum, which is respectable if you compare us to some of the agencies which have staff in multiples of what we have. As far as our agency is concerned, the South African Institute for Rugby Sport, we perform 2,500 tests ourselves. In addition to that, we do tests for the World Anti-Doping Agency and other agencies such as International Federation and ANADO, which is Association of National Anti-Doping Organizations. We perform 94 tests for WADA and 240 tests for other agencies. As far as our tests are concerned, 65% of our tests were in competition and 35% of our tests were out of competition. Now, for the edification of members who are new to the committee, you know, we test in competition. So we will go to an event that is held, for example, an athletics championship, a rugby match, or a soccer match, and we would go and test at that match. But we find that most athletes already are aware of the fact that we're going to test at those events, and therefore, if they are doping, they're going to take the necessary precautions not to be detected. And most of the doping actually occurs out of competition. And for us to test out of competition, we have the athletes have to provide us what we call whereabouts information. And we use that whereabouts information to increase out of competition testing. So 24/7, we can pick up at the door of any athlete and ask them to submit to test the doping control. Now, we would like to increase our out of competition statistics to at least 50% of the total tests we perform. The current ratio of in competition to out of competition of 65-35 is not completely acceptable to us. We would like to be 50, because I think the area we should be focusing on is out of competition. Our current thinking is that in competition testing is more a test of intelligence than of doping, because people know you're doping. If they just get caught, then it's pure stupidity. As far as the sport codes that we test, we perform most of the tests on rugby because it's a higher risk sport. With apologies to my member who comes from rugby, or the members of this committee who come from rugby, we consider it a higher risk sport. And over and above that, rugby funds us extensively to perform additional tests for them. So rugby in South Africa has a commitment, and the International Rugby Board, to anti-doping, and they provide us significant funding to do tests over and above what our funding allows. We perform 372 tests for athletics, for soccer 252, cycling 161, and for swimming 108. And I'll explain to you how we arrive at the number of tests we perform for each sporting code. The number of positive tests that we return of the 2,500 tests we do is generally less than 1%. And the international norm is about 1 to 2%. Now, you may ask the question quite rightfully, is this the extent of doping in the world, or is that just the number of positive tests we return? My sense is it's just the number of positive tests we return, and it's an indication of the low level of sophistication we currently have, because we think that at least 10 to 20% of elite athletes dope. So, you know, I'll also speak about some of the measures we're taking to try and change what we do. As far as the positive tests we had 22 positive tests out of a test sample of nearly 2,500, which is about 1%. 9 of them were for cannabis, for DACA, 5 for diuretics, 2 for anabolic steroids, 2 for stimulants, 2 for beta blockers, 1 for an athlete who refused to submit to sample collection, and 1 was for glucocorticoid steroids. In terms of the way forward for the Institute for Drug Free Sport, our strategic objective for the coming year is to conduct an efficient and effective documented doping prevention program that is independent, unannounced, reliable, secure, and suitable for the purpose of detecting and deterring the use of prohibited substances and methods by conducting a successful doping program. So the important question is effective and efficient, unannounced, reliable, secure, suitable, because it's critical that every test we do, we catch the athlete by surprise once. But secondly, we need to have our systems in place so that should we take a case to a prosecution, that athlete is found guilty. The last thing we want to do is take a case to prosecution with, through procedural irregularities, the athlete gets away. So that's why we use the terms that we do in defining one of our strategic objectives. The second strategic objective is to implement a comprehensive national education and awareness program that is relevant to specific target groups. It is accessible, it is valid, and it is measurable for the purpose of preventing and deterring the use of prohibited substances and methods. So we need to stop people from doping. The aim of the education program is to, those who want to dope is to prevent them from doping. Those who are doping is to stop them from doping. And those who may potentially inadvertently dope, to stop them from inadvertently doping. And by inadvertently doping is taking substances which are prohibited, which is unknown to the athlete, or taking supplements which must undergo the rigorous quality control that we would expect. The third strategic objective is to participate and actively engage with international counterparts and other agencies who have strategic commonalities with the agency. Now, it is important for us to constantly interact internationally, and the reason for that is simple. We are a small agency. We have a very limited budget. There's agencies with 50 staff, with 100 staff, that do much more innovative work than we do. Now, we don't have the capacity to do that kind of thing, but what we do is we learn from these agencies, so we copy much of what they do, and we rely on some of these agencies to provide us with some of the expertise that we have. So that's why international liaison in the field of anti-doping is critical. And also, doping is an international effort, and therefore anti-doping also requires an international effort. The fourth strategic objective is to pursue additional funding sources to supplement the government grant that we get. And last but certainly not least is to build an organizational policy framework and operational support that supports efficient, transparent, and accountable corporate governance. So those are the five strategic objectives of the Institute for Drug Reform. Now, the way we test athletes is that we have what we call a national testing pool. And the national testing pool is made up of athletes that we identify who we believe are at high risk for doping. And the way we do that is we look at the science of doping and we say, which sports are likely to benefit from doping? So we know that rugby, weightlifting, powerlifting, cycling would benefit from doping. So in the science of doping, we know that there are certain sports that benefit from doping. We would consider them high-risk sports. Secondly, which are sports which have had a historical propensity for doping? All of us, when I think about doping, we think about cycling. So cycling has a high propensity for doping. Athletics has a high propensity for doping. Rugby has a high propensity for doping. And weightlifting, we know, has a historical propensity for doping. So that's the second factor that we consider in developing our national register testing pool. The third is a national profile of the sport. So if I talk about South African sport, what comes to mind? Rugby, cricket, soccer, athletics. Those are the high profile sports we have. Something else to consider. And then the infrastructure of the sport, do they have an anti-doping code? Are they signatories to the World Anti-Doping Agency? And fourthly, the level of international and national level competitions that those sports are involved in, or South African National Federation are involved in. So the more international level athletes we have, the greater propensity that we would have to include them in our national level. As far as anti-doping education is concerned, we've got different target audiences, and it's important that we tailor our education programs to specific target audiences. And our target audiences, first and foremost, are South African international and national level athletes. We want to prevent them from doping. Those who are doping, we want to stop them. And importantly, we want to prevent inadvertent doping. Then National Sports Federation, so that they understand the responsibilities and the requirements. High school athletes, competitive recreational athletes, general sports public, and the media. Now, the last two are important because oftentimes the public and the media begin to see anti-doping as an ogre. So we need to win them over and say that at the end of the day, anti-doping agencies have moral authority. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create justice and fair play. That's what we're there for. We're trying to ensure that every athlete competes on an equal footing. And therefore, I think we need to push a moral agenda as far as we are concerned, so that we win over the general public and the media. Some of the anti-doping education projects that we've had, we customize to different sports federations. So if we speak into cricket, we would give a very different message to speak into soccer. And we know that 90% of our positive cases in soccer come from Dhaka. So obviously our messages will be very different to different sports federations. We've also, when we speak into coaches, our message needs to be very specific to coaches in terms of performance enhancement without the use of prohibited substances. Then we're going to have regional seminars for medical doctors and the sports medicine community because they need to know what to prescribe to athletes, what not to prescribe. Should an athlete be taking the prohibited substance, how to apply for a therapeutic use exemption, so they understand the procedure and understand how we can adjudicate the application. We've also had presentations to high school athletes, and we had a budget from both the Department of Sport and Recreation as well as from the National Lottery to roll out a program of anti-doping education to high schools. And what we do is we try to integrate that with life orientation, curriculum focusing on fair play, ethics in sport, sports drugs, as well as trying to combine that education with social drugs. And that's been very successful. As far as our international relations are concerned, the South African Institute for Drug-Free Sport remains the only WADA recognized national anti-doping agency in Africa currently. We're the primary partner in Africa in building anti-doping capacity. We've got RADOS in Africa, the regional anti-doping organization, and we partner with them in building capacity in different countries in Africa. For the year in review, we have conducted training and education seminars on behalf of various African sports authorities in Egypt, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, in Sudan, in Lesotho, and in Namibia. And South Africa Institute for Rugby Sports also sits on the executive committee of the Association of National Anti-Doping Organizations, which is based in Canada. And as many of you are aware, our minister sits on the executive committee of WADA. In terms of the way forward, a strategic vision for us to go forward. Now, you know, the way we started anti-doping is you go and you test in competition. The next evolution was that we test out of competition. And from there we evolve further. That what we need to begin to do is have improved relationships with the police, with customs, and with judicial sectors to supply the target supply chain. Because what's happening is many of the prohibited substances, the anabolic steroids, are being imported into the country. Unless we have a relationship with the customs officials and the judicial officials, we need to have no control of anabolic steroids coming into the country. We know that Australia has fine-tuned this, and they are catching a lot of the athletes through this process of opening packages, of using, you know, internet surveillance, and they picking up lots of this, and it's simply because of their relationship with police, with customs, and with judicial sectors. It's something we're working on, and we're going to rely on the DG of Sport and Recreation to facilitate this process for us, to try and create an integrated framework for preventing doping control in the country. The second is for us to maintain international standards for testing, compliance with the World Anti-Doping Code, and we need to introduce a comprehensive blood testing strategy. Now, currently, we don't do a blood testing strategy, we don't do blood testing, or we do it on a very limited extent because of budgetary constraints. But we need to move to that because some of the substances can only be detected through blood testing. But it's a huge cost for us, and therefore we need additional funding to do that, but we're in the process of rolling this out within our current budget. Thirdly, is integrating drug-free sport ideals with sports sponsors. So Nike and Adidas and Puma and Hummel put millions of rand into sport. But how much of that money actually goes into anti-doping to ensure that we have a clean image for sport? So we need to try and integrate some of what we do with the image of clean sport. Our education campaign that harnesses various media outlets and targets teenage competitors to focus on ethics, on fair play, on the health risks of performance-enhancing drugs, and the consequences of using performance-enhancing substances. Some of the key performance indicators that we have for the year 2009-2010 is to have the registered testing pool, which we've got already, which means that these are the people we will primarily target for testing. And importantly, our registered testing pool has to provide us with whereabouts information. So we need whereabouts information for 365 days of the year from our registered testing pool. All our Operation Excellence athletes who are going to go to the Commonwealth Games, that are going to go to the Olympic Games, are part of our registered testing pool. The second thing we want to do is create a biological passport. Now, previously what we did is we did urine tests and we did blood tests, and we measured that. But what we need to begin to do now is create a new paradigm of anti-doping. And the new paradigm of anti-doping is to create a footprint of every athlete. So we will do 10 samples of an athlete, and we have a fingerprint of that athlete's biology, what his blood profile looks like and what his steroid profile looks like. So the next time we do a sample, not only do we test it for prohibited substances, but we compare it against that individual fingerprint. Should it go outside that fingerprint parameters, as an anti-doping rule violation. So there's a new paradigm we're introducing in anti-doping. Not only do we have to test positive for a substance, but if it goes outside the normal physiological parameters, that's considered an offensive one. So that's a new paradigm of anti-doping which we need to introduce. And again, that takes an enormous amount of resources. Anti-doping education, we've got a high school education project, and we are developing interactive educational tools both for athletes and for the public to use. Again, we need to build up investigation capacity. we need to build a framework to effectively prosecute the doping supply chain. And you know, I can tell you categorically that we get telephone calls regularly. We get intelligence information that there's doping happening here. These people are manufacturing prohibited stuff, manufacturing steroids. But we have limited capacity to act. We don't have the investigative framework to actually take this forward. And countries like Australia and the United States, I mean, the biggest doping scandal in the world was Valco in the USA. And they didn't do it by doing urine tests on some on athletes. They did it through investigation. And this is Marion Jones and Kelly White and many of those athletes fell by the wayside. Because it was through investigation that they found guilty of offenses. So we need to begin to build investigative capacity that allows us to track some of these athletes, track the supply chain, the suppliers, and we can prosecute them. Unfortunately, we don't have that capacity in this country. I mean, our police services are overwhelmed with other crimes. And I can understand that, but we as an agency need to begin to link up with specific other agencies, for example, such as the National Prosecutions Authority or the successors of the Scorpions to begin to look at this issue. It is a critical issue we need to look at. We're currently sitting with a lot of evidence, intelligence information that we need to take forward, and we're struggling to do that. And we also need the support of the Medicine Control Council for its successor, which is going to come into being in a few months' time. Administration, we need less reliance on government funding, and we need to kind of secure other grants and sponsorships, because you know, our funding for the last 10 years in the department, from the time we started to now, has gone up 50%. So we've got a 5% increase in our budget year on year. And the nature of our work has changed significantly. And we're going to have great difficulty coping with the kind of work we need to do unless there's a qualitative increase in our budget. And we're speaking to the minister and we're speaking to the director general regarding this, and they're very sympathetic to us. We need an efficient and effective management of resources and funds through full compliance with accepted governance policy. I spoke about the new paradigm. The new paradigm includes out-of-competition testing, blood testing, blood profiling, intelligence-based surveillance, intelligence testing, and some of the other challenges we have is to ensure that every national federation in South Africa complies with anti-doping rules. We need the supplements that athletes use, there's no quality control. Many of them contain scheduled substances, but they're not governed under the Medicine Control Council. And I understand there's a new bill before Parliament that's going to take that into account. They're going to control the use of supplements because at least 20% to 30% of supplements contain scheduled substances. And many of the athletes will test positive inadvertently. And I think those are some of the challenges we've got. We're aware of the challenges. We have the capacity to take them forward. And in that, we will need the support of the Trinity, the Department, and the Ministry. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you very much.
I think it's inspiring to be
so fascinating to listen to what you are telling us about the trends in the world and the trends at home and all these other things. But one thing that strikes my mind generally is the paradigm of something telling you exactly what is it that, up to so far, not even America is at that level, Cuba only, that can manage to do that. So I can see you're moving quickly to Hugo Chavez. He's coming to South Africa, I think he must meet him, and the Cubans. Because Cubans will even tell you an athlete, the doctor was attending him, the kind of food that athlete has, injuries and everything. In South Africa, you can't do it now. You can't say, tell me exactly now, Lucas Khate, when was he injured, what was his operation, what was the kind of food that he has to eat to heal, and all that. Or you can track players in this country. You can't. You can only do it in Cuba through a thumbprint or through your tag, and then it reveals the whole history. You were found guilty on such a thing, and then this and this and this, and the whole history. I'm sure it's a challenge that the DG has to grapple up with you, for you to clean spot out of all these other things that you're talking about. let me give over to members to ask questions and clarity out of this, because it's a very interesting subject, and then I can see they're interested to learn more and hear more about it. Honorable, I'll know your name, don't worry.
Comrade Chair, the easiest way to remember my name, think about Joe Soho.
Yes.
Shepherdson, through you, I would just like to ask some questions in terms of the accreditation of the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport. I would like to know, you know, they are using all of these equipment in terms of verification, auditing, assessment, and also complying. Does this body, is this body accredited to some sort of South African Bureau of Standards in terms of the Trade and Metrology Act? If yes, is there any audit that is available as far as the audit is concerned? And in terms of the substance that has been mentioned, I've noted, I'm not too sure whether the doctor is acquainted with this ephedrine. I've noted that it doesn't fall under substance that is illegal. Just for interest sake, is ephedrine a substance that is illegal or legal? Thank you.
Another question? Clarity? Yes, Thomas.
The doctor mentioned that 80% of the money comes from the department. Now the 20%, where does that come from? And that's one. And secondly, how is it recorded, Chairperson? Is it also in the financial statement, or where is it recorded? You know, the extra money that we get.
Just wait a little bit, Doc. Let me check whether it's just a union comment.
I want to find out. So much as the doctors are saying, this is the same as Portuguese, that is the test could be fake in competition testing. I don't know whether I'm wrong. If that is the case, what is the cause of that, and what are you doing to attest it?
I didn't understand the question. What do you mean by testing fake?
Yeah, when that is, you have said, when you are doing the competition testing, the participants are aware that they must be tested. That is what I'm saying by taking the test. And then if that is the case, what are you doing about it? And what is the cause?
You said just when you speak there, when you arrived there already, other people knew that you are coming for doping. And they say, for you to be able to test them, and even if they have been there, told them that you are coming, what are you doing over that? Which other strategies are you using for you to combat that? Because there will always be busy that the doctor is coming, so you better drink a lot of water, whatever, or take a lot of data, and then whatever the situation is. So I think it's
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a couple of questions.
Can I ask one of the questions I've got before we move on?
No, this is the last one. We're only three.
Doc, you mentioned something about the audit, that you weren't happy about the financial numbers. I'm not sure that it's a good idea that we short-circuit the audit. I don't know if you're worried about the cost or if they're charging you, whether you want to try and diminish the type of audit. That's the first thing. Number two, on the actual testing itself, you said that the high profile of sports people are the ones you target first, but surely you only become high profile from amateur level. So my question is, how many amateurs are tested? Clearly they're the ones who want to aspire to become professional. That's the first point. Secondly, do you test overseas athletes when they're actually playing here and visiting here? I know you touched on Confederations Cup a little bit, but that's FIFA initiative. And then finally, going back to amateur, you talk about education at high schools, which I'm sure has been very good. But my experience is that high schools is where it already starts. So they have access to these drugs and steroids and so on. And are you testing them aggressively around the country? Thank you.
toxic and other.
Thank you very much for the questions. I'm not going to follow an order, just the order I got it on my page. You know, as far as the first point made by the Honourable Chairperson regarding the fingerprint of athletes in terms of the biological fingerprint, I think the International Federation, which is most far advanced, is Cycling Union, UCI, International Cycling Union, that they put millions and millions of euros into a program to create a biological profile of every professional athlete. They're sitting with a few cases which they feel they can prosecute. But because it is so scientifically sensitive, they haven't taken it to prosecution yet. You need to have 100% watertight case or 99% watertight case before you take it to prosecution, because it's dealing with basically human physiology. So it's the way forward. But I think we're still in the process of fine-tuning that. So, you know, we've got a long way to go. And the only way to do it is the more tests you do, the more accurate your profile of the individual athlete. As far as the money is concerned, I think Mr. Lee asked the question on where do we get the other 20%. The other 20% we get from National Federation. So we get money from cricket sometimes. We get money from rugby every year. So that's one of the sources of revenue. We do testing for the World Anti-Doping Agency. We derive revenue from there. We do testing for international federations, such as the IRB. We derive revenue from there. And we do testing for ANADO, the Association of National Anti-Doping Organizations, on behalf of other anti-doping organizations from around the world. We do testing on their behalf. So, for example, if an athlete from the United Kingdom is training in South Africa, we don't have jurisdiction over that athlete. But the United Kingdom will tell us, can you test the athletes for us? We test them and we bill them for it. So that's where we derive the additional 20% revenue from. And then we've been given some funding by, for example, SuperSport gave us some money as a donation. We get some money from them as well. And all of that money is accounted for in the financial aid. The second question regarding quality assurance is that we don't do any analytical sampling. All the analytical sampling, which uses the sophisticated equipment, is done at the Brookfield Laboratory. The Brookfield Laboratory undergoes quality assurance on a regular basis, and they also undergo quality assurance by the World Anti-Doping Agency. Now, for a laboratory to do sample analysis, it has to be accepted by the World Anti-Doping Agency, who will send them blank samples on a regular basis to ensure that they maintain the quality. As far as we are concerned, we don't use any instrumentation that requires any form of scientific calibration. But you know, having said that, we are ISO accredited with the institution, and we've been for many years. So as far as our systems are concerned, we've got quality control. We have regular audits of our doping control officers. We have auditors going out to see that the work that they do complies with the standards. So we've got some standards, and sometimes, for example, we would have counterparts of international agencies coming to look at the work that we're doing. We've also had our doping control officers working internationally to the quality of people we've got. So we undergo quality control on a regular basis, as far as agency is concerned. As far as Epidrine is concerned, Epidrine is currently, you know, I'm going to differentiate between two substances. One is an illegal substance, the other one is a prohibited substance. So a prohibited substance isn't necessarily illegal, but it's prohibited in terms of anti-doping rules. So ephedrine is a prohibited substance, but it's under what you call a specified substance because of the risk of inadvertent doping. So ephedrine is currently a prohibited substance. The World Anti-Doping Agency is beginning to introduce pseudoephedrine, which they took off the list a couple of years ago. They're thinking of reintroducing it as a prohibited substance. Now that's containing many of the cold and flu remedies. And that's going to create huge problems for us, and we'll be worried about them reintroducing that. As far as faking the test is concerned, it's very difficult. I mean, as far as, you know, when we test at a competition, it is an unannounced test. So nobody knows except the organizers that they're going to come. And the only reason the organizers know is they're going to provide accommodation for us, they're going to give us tickets to access the facility and that kind of thing. But athletes and others are not aware that we're going to test at a competition. Even our attendance at competition is unannounced. Now, it's difficult for an athlete to take a take a sample. Because what we do is, when we take a sample from an athlete, we make the athlete undress completely. So they've got to push up their shirt to the chest and the pants to the knees. And we've got to see them passing that sample into the specimen bottle. So it's very difficult to take that test because we're seeing it coming from their body into the vein. And obviously we have female doping control officers for females and male doping control officers for males. So, you know, it's difficult to fake it, but clearly they've been athletes who fake samples. So what they would do is they have a thing that looks like a penis. They call it a vaginator, which they would kind of put on and use that to pass urine. Females would have a condom inserted into the vagina, which they would use to pass urine specimens. Or if they know they're coming, they would take somebody else's urine and inject it into their bladder and then pass that as a specimen. So clearly, athletes know how to fake some of the samples, but in our context, we do as much as possible to prevent people doing that kind of thing. We know there was a case at the Olympic Games, but just prior to the Olympic Games, when three athletes provided the same, the urine was the same, identical, from three athletes. It was impossible. It was physiologically impossible. And those three urine samples came from the same person. And obviously, three athletes passed it. So somebody must have given them urine and they injected it into their bladders and passed the same urine. So some laboratories have the sophistication of doing genetic testing to determine whether the... And obviously, when you're putting it through what they call a gas chromatograph, you can see the pattern. And when the three patterns look identical, we know it's from the same individual. So it's difficult to take a test. The honorable member asked about whether I'm concerned about the quality of the audit and whether the cost would compromise the quality. I don't believe so. I believe in anybody's eyes it's unreasonable for an agency to pay 10% of the budget for an audit cost. Now, I welcome an audit by the Auditor General. We audited by our auditors. We have internal auditors, and we have the Auditor General coming. So we have a number of audit processes. But, you know, for them, I mean, you know, my experience, and I can speak at length about our problem with the Auditor General. I mean, I believe they need to use a model for a small agency to audit a small agency. When the auditor does a sample, or when they do samples at any agency or organization, they take samples. For us, they use 100% to look at compliance. So they use every single document they have. I mean, I can't see a necessity for that. You know, that's going over and above normal, generally acceptable accounting procedures. And we've got an auditor here, but you know, he can vouch for that. I'm no auditor. But to me, it was over the top. You know, we expect to pay about 300 or 250, 300,000, but for it to go about over 400,000, to me, that's unacceptable. And they come and spend, you know, they bring junior people there who spend hours and days at our offices. So I don't want to compromise an audit process. I think an audit process is as important for us as it is for you. Because we need to know and have the assurance as a board that the books that we've got truly reflect what we're doing. And if there's any problems, that we need to identify them. So I don't think that I meant to say that we want to compromise the quality of the audit. I think the cost of the audit and the extent to which they're going away. Secondly, I take your point about amateur athletes. All I'm saying is that we have a ratio. So the bulk of our efforts would be at international and national level athletes. But we would still test amateur athletes as well. They would not form part of a registered testing pool, but we would also come a direct test at amateur athletes. You know, obviously, you know, each test costs at least R1,500. We've got a limited budget. You've got to ask yourself the question, where do you direct the test? You can do a limited number of tests. We can do a maximum of 2,500 tests. Who are you going to direct those tests? You know, that's a critical question for us. You know, as far as school sport is concerned, it is an area of concern for us. We think that private schools, sports schools, are high risk for doping, and we've got evidence to prove that. We've got a couple of issues. One is jurisdiction. We don't have jurisdiction to go into the school and test. You know, we need parental consent to go in. So, you know, we need to look at how we can get the necessary authority to go into a school. We can't walk into a test, walk into a class, and I'm going to ask if we want to test you. We don't have the authority to do that. So we are very limited in terms of what we can do for school. Now, one of the areas we do involve ourselves, we claim to be, because there, the South African Rugby Union gives us the authority to test. Because it's the South African Rugby Union tournament, or sanctioned tournament. But as far as schools are concerned, we know there's a problem, but we don't have the jurisdiction and the authority to go and test. As far as overseas athletes are concerned, when an overseas athlete is competing in a competition in South Africa, we have jurisdiction to check. But if an overseas athlete is competing, is training in South Africa, we don't have jurisdiction unless we are given the authority by their national anti-doping organization and international federation, their national federation of WADA to test the athlete, then we will test the athlete. And we do lots of those tests because of the whereabouts information, any test athlete testing in a country, got to notify the agencies and WADA, and they will direct us to test. A lot of the tests we do for WADA and for other agencies, and the 20% of our revenue comes from the testing we do on international athletes who are training in South Africa. Similarly, when our athletes are training in Switzerland or in Europe, then we would pay costs for the National Anti-Doping Organization in that country to do testing on our behalf. So yes, we do test international athletes.
Doc, thank you very much. Gigi, I think the job, if you have time to deal with this matter with the DG and the education on how the concern raised by the honorable member there, you begin to deal with that at an early stage and cool level. I think it's very important that you start doing it there. There are many wrong things going on at the school level there. Now, when you don't attend to that, it becomes a culture, something that is a norm that you have to happen up until an athlete even goes to the professional level with that kind of problem. I think it's one thing that you have to take with the DG as soon as you go out here. The DG must create conditions of how to meet with the Department of Education counterpart and then show and discuss ways and means of how the authority can create every condition for you to be able to do those kind of things at school level. I closed the discussion, but okay, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Usually when I give members a chance and then everything is over, I close the baton the same, I give it to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask the following questions in terms of the Auditor General's report, and as far as the performance and information is concerned, on the matter of government. I've noted that in the internal audit, the public entity has an internal audit function operation throughout the financial year. Now, internal audit function operates in terms of an approved internal audit. Now, internal audit function subsequently fulfilled in responsibility for the year and sent out in the Treasury. Now, the financial statements submitted for audit, subject to any material amendments resulting from the audit. Now, the prior year external audit recommendations have been substantially implemented. Now, is there any way that the doctor can just elaborate on these issues in terms of the filing of the audit in general?
And if those issues that the honourable member is raising, they are not substantive, why is the Auditor General putting them there? Because as soon as the Auditor General puts them there, they are substantive issues that have a certain impact to the work that we are doing and which he has picked up as some of the things that probably say these are the issues and these are questions put to drug free, and these are the responses that come from drug free. I think it's a very good question that you answered.
Honorable Chairperson, I think certainly it is an important question, and I will address the question. But prior to that, just coming back to school sport, you know, we had an Act of Parliament passed last year or a year before that, which allowed testing for social drugs in school. To me, that was an ideal opportunity to allow us to test for sports drugs at school. Amend that act to allow us access to schools to test for sports drugs. We did make that recommendation to the Department of Education when that bill was out for comment, and unfortunately that wasn't taken on board. And to me that would have been the easiest way to grant us access to schools to do testing for sports drugs. Coming to the questions, I think all the questions that the Honourable Member raised point to one fact, and that's regards internal audit. We've been aware of this lack of an internal audit function within the Saladin Institute for Rugby Sport for the year in question. And the reason for that was that we had relied for most of our history on the internal audit committee of the Department of Sport and Recreation. That the Department of Sport and Recreation Internal Audit Committee also serves as our Internal Audit Committee, and if I'm not mistaken, also the Internal Audit Committee for Boxing South Africa. And then there was some problem with the Internal Audit Committee of Department of Sport and Recreation, and there's a whole history behind that. And therefore, they stopped providing the internal audit function for the Institute for Rugby Sport. I think it had to do with terms of reference of what their terms of reference was in terms of the payment that they had got. I think they were sitting on one day and wanted to be paid to serve for three committees, and it was those kinds of issues. And I think many of them resigned subsequently from the internal audit committee of the department. So in that period, while this process was taking place, unfortunately, and contrary to demands of CSMA, we sat without an internal audit committee. We are currently busy constituting an internal audit committee and trying to remedy the breach that we have. So we accept there was a problem with the historical reasons for it, and what we're doing now is we're constituting our own internal audit committee, and we've asked Boxing South Africa whether we can share that audit committee with them, because that would be an efficient way to do it.
How much are they asking for? It's a set
rate that we have in terms of the treasury regulation.
What is it?
I can't remember.
Can't remember. Okay. If there are members who want to take the last bite, I am giving them, and then Kora, and then if there's any other member before we come back.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Doc, page 5, yeah? 2-5. Number 9, non-compliance with applicable legislation. There are three issues which are raised there. No approved risk management strategy, proper verified and material and significant framework in place as required by treasury legislation. Not appropriate management in place as required by treasury. No written delegation in place as required by treasury.
I take your point, Honourable Member. They're not substantive matters. Many of them were internal audit functions. They were not substantive enough to give us a qualified audit, but I think they were points which the Auditor General had to note.
No approved risk management strategy, fraud prevention plan, materially and significant framework in place as required by treasury regulation. It means it's a requirement. And even if that requirement has no unintended consequences, by the fact of the matter, it should be in place, because here the Auditor General raising this matter again. I do not think it's something that says it is not material, but it's a question of, yes, and the Auditor General raised it to us in the next audit report. I think these matters will not be matters of emphasis from the Auditor General, because it is a question of treasury regulation. This is the regulation. It is a requirement that we must fulfill.
Honourable Chairperson, I take your point, and I don't think I can defend the point that you didn't have the required policies in place. I also want to remind the committee that it is a 2007-2008 financial report, and since then these measures have been put into effect.
Then you've asked us to hold
it.
Yes, sir.
Just an idea. I think Dr. Kevin.
Sorry, we're recording there, because when there is a death kit, we go back to these things so that we get recording of her reporting. So out as a member.
Thank you. You mentioned that you had a lack of funding. So
just an idea for you, Jefferson. A lot of sports federations get sponsorships. Maybe a way to look at it is a small percentage of that sponsorship goes towards this body to make sure that you can effectively control what you're trying to do in the sport. Just an idea, and maybe we can engage with bodies on that.
Now, I think it's a good idea, because he's saying the responsibility of doping and all that, and their own federation is boxing South Africa. But then, if 5% or 10%, that has to go to drug-free for the work that they are doing. Out of the sponsor, it can't just be sponsored, 15% goes to the pocket of people as a bonus. It cannot be. That 15, that 5% rather go to drug-free, because if AFSA gives 500 million, 10% goes to people, then it's a wrong thing. I would rather agree with the honorable member that we should check the way of how can it discuss with the federation around having certain percentage of their sponsorship committed to complement the drug-free institution.
Thank you, Chairperson Kumbe Stella. All right. My question is on the doping control staff job. I am looking at the documentation that you drafted, the demographics. You saying on the doping control officers, you have employed 60% and you are attending 66% males, and then 34% females. I just want to understand why the imbalance. Secondly, on the allocation on the provinces, I'm looking at East London specifically in the Eastern Cape and Port Elizabeth, being attended 6%, and then the greater part goes to Gauteng. If I can get clarity, why the difference?
Gauteng, the richer province. Honourable Member, I take that the recommendation and the suggestion of the Member regarding sponsorship is something we've looked at. We've also looked at every competition that is held in South Africa and needs a budget for doping control, so that any doping control we do at that event needs to come out from the sponsorship. So we need to put a sponsorship for an event, and the Fund International Federation is something that we have considered. And you know, if I can take that as a recommendation and hold Dr. Ngatani to do a 10% of his budget for doping control, it would be wonderful. Just to answer the question of the Honourable Member regarding doping control officers, why we have the split between males and females and why we have the split between the Eastern Cape and Gauteng, the reason is pretty simple. That we need male doping control officers to test males, and female doping control officers to test females.
The imbalance.
Yeah, so the imbalance is...
Don't talk to the Honourable Member, Chair, Doc. I am chairing, so talk to me.
My apologies,
okay.
Chair. So the imbalance that we have is a reflection of the imbalance of athletes we have. That the majority of athletes in South Africa are male, and therefore we need more doping control officers who are male rather than female, because we don't have female doping control officers testing females, testing males, or males testing females. So the doping control officers we have is a reflection of the demographics of the athletes.
Secondly, proportional to the participants.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The second point, and a similar answer, is that Gauteng has far more athletes than East London. So therefore, we require a greater distribution of athletes in the Gauteng area than we would anywhere else in the country, for example, East London. And the reason why that's important is that we require a doping control officer to do a certain minimum number of tests every year to maintain their accreditation. Now, if we have a large percentage of doping control officers in East London, where there's very few tests to be performed, and they don't do the requisite number of tests, they're not going to fulfill the requirements of accreditation. So therefore, we have most of our doping control officers where most of the athletes that our target audience reside.
As soon as you have an agreement with the Department of Sport in increasing this school testing, then the Eastern Cape will not be a problem of deregistering people to qualify them, because there will be enough work for them to keep them on the accreditation board.
It you can get Mr. Peterson to double my budget, he'll do that.
I think this report, honourable members, it's a report which was supposed to come long ago. There is one that I think is much improved than this one from but the problem is that we can't give drug-free money when they have a pending annual report, because we have to see the money that has been appropriated for them, have they used it profitably in terms of their own strategic objectives. Now, if that has not happened and then we are at this level to go and pass the budget on the 1st of July, it means one entity in the sports administration must not get the budget because it has not accounted for what it was given to them. And that is it is something that we are going to do. It is something that we're not going to negotiate with any other entity. Okay. You see, when President is hard on us around Wiggy, others are going to lose in this road. Because by September, October, when the annual reports are given to us, if it has not been submitted to us that time, you must definitely know that you're not going to get the budget for the following year. Never. And there's an amendment on the money bill that gives the portfolio committee the right to increase and the right to reduce and the right to reject the budget. And I will not get the bash, and these honorable members getting the bash by being inefficient, by not working, and yet all the time we're shooting the departments and the entities that are not doing their job. We're not going to do that. I think it was out of men that we must do that, but there was nothing compelling us to say, boxing is not bringing the report, and then unfortunately let's go on with our own strategic plans, because doing strategic plans now, and close the door. And it's in the law, but we have not done that. But it's not going to happen this coming year. So, Job, you are not falling in this category, but I'm just saying to you, wake up quickly, don't get into this category, because the little that you are getting, you will not get it in one financial year. Yes, Job.
Honorable Chairperson, I think I need to respond. Firstly, I think that if you look at the report, the budget has been set in accordance with the strategic objectives that we set out for ourselves, the center. I want to make it very clear that we as an Institute for Drug Free Sport have spent our money in accordance to the strategic objectives which were approved by the Minister of Sports and Recreation, and this committee has seen. Secondly, this report was timelessly sent to the Department and to Parliament. So the fact that this was tabled late was no fault of ours, but was the fault of the system, which failed to get this report through to the members of this committee previously. So we had timelessly provided our report, we have kept to our budget, and we have kept to our strategic objectives. So I want to just clarify that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, there was no dispute about that, at all, because your annual report 2007-2008, you were here twice, and then the last time you were on your way outside the country, but I called you, but then the report was not tabled. There is a tabling of the report, the Speaker of the National Assembly. It was not tabled. But it was not a fault of your own. It was something else within the system. I'm not doing that. And if this report was not right, these members could have been asking questions now. Now, all the questions that they've raised, real, genuine questions that are reflecting in the 2007-2008 annual report. And I'm sure they are going to compare the 2008-2009 annual report and check those things that they were reflected on 2007-2008 are the still things that are carrying to 2008-2009. Then at that level we say, there's no system that is safe, but you have to explain why do you have to carry this thing for 3 years in succession and then without attending to them. But definitely, I'm sure members are comfortable within all these other things. But I think
the upside to it is that it will be fresh in your memory when you come back in a few months' time with the next report.
Definitely. That's a flag on your side. Right. But in short, on 2007-2008, it was yet another year for drug-free to have unqualified support. The question of the financial audit, the performance audit, and the internal audit, those are key things, Doc, in any other institution. So you have raised them and then as very fundamental things. I think even the department knows those are key things that drive the whole financial aspects within the department. But with the 10% also that you talk about, I think because you are going to be given another load of work around this awareness in education, in schools, and all those, the 10%, you have to renegotiate the 10%. And then with DG, and DG would come to the committee and present and say, we are putting a cap on this 10%. Can the committee agree with me that there should be another amount of money? And then we talk to them. But then you have not, in your slide, show us whether you're testing boxing. And then you said boxing is not a high risk. Because you take out rugby, karate, and others, and you term them the high risk. But I just want to check, why not doing boxing and take it in a category of not being a high risk?
Honourable Chairperson, we do consider boxing high risk. We did 82 tests in boxing for the year.
Okay. Because I didn't see there, but maybe those are the ones that you are there to make an example of. Okay. Doc, you have raised these things that you wanted to raise. If you have not gone to WADA conference or any other, in a week's time we'll be having a dealing with the budget of the department and the strategic plan. Some of the things that you're raising that are compelling reasons for increase on the money for the side of drug-free. We have been successfully doing that in the past 2 years that I've been discussing this with you. I think these things that you're raising here, you have to, when we're dealing with the strategic plan and the budget for the department, come and raise them, because as and when we raise them and then we understand the logic behind those are reasons that we factor through to the department and say this department can get at least 1.09% increase or whatever for them to be able to start dealing with these challenges that and even if probably the money has been very little stock, but there's been an very significant improvement around the issue of the only thing that we're still battling, we're not got it right, is to retain the quality of the CFO and the CEO, who is a market-related paid person within the institution. And that is a matter that ourselves are facing, because if you pay people peanuts, you get monkeys. And we're saying that to the department all the time. And they have not come with a reason why they cannot meet the market in terms of their CEO, which is a legislation requirement that we must get the CEO and the CFO who is competent to can be toe-to-toe with the Auditor General's office around fundamental arguments on basic accounting principles and the requirements. The question of the biological testing, I think it's a very important thing. We must start dealing with it with the DG and talk about it and check to the extent that it could be taken, because the world is changing. Why is the world is changing and then you're standing and then you will get lost because you find the world has changed and then you can't see the rationale. I think you have to do that. The question of the collaboration between the justice, police, and the Home Affairs. It's another matter that we have to deal with that matter as soon as possible. Because that collaboration is very important, because police would be there to do all the necessary things that the police are doing, and the customs in Home Affairs, they'll be able to help you in doing those tests and do all other things that are coming into the country or anywhere else. And the judiciary must prosecute those who are offending. And that line of a chain of collaboration is important. But I think DG is no more new now. There is all DG in the department now. I think matters that we have to raise with them, and then and we are going to raise with the DG and say, these matters were raised by some DG. The extent of you interacting with these people, what is the extent of you? Because the school is making a report there. When we come back and then we look into that report and say, these are the issues that we raised, that the DG must interact with your drug-free police and judiciary and customs to try to close the net for those people that are using those drugs in that way. So in all respects,
thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to make two points. One is that we've engaged both the minister as well as the DG on the issue around funding. And I think both of them have been very sympathetic to our cause. But I also understand that they're constrained within the MPEF and the funds available. But we continue to engage them, and we hopefully will have a meeting with the DG and with the minister in the near future to try and put our case even more forcefully to them and hope that they could find some money somewhere which they could direct to our agency. So we understand that they work within the constraints of their budget and the MPEF, and hopefully within that there's some money. So now I don't want it to seem as if the DG and the minister are unsympathetic to our cause. I think they certainly are. But it's just a matter of locating some funding to assign to us. The second point, as far as the market-related salaries, unfortunately, again, we are constrained by the public service administration in terms of how they classify a job and in terms of what level they set a job. So, you know, we think our CEO and members of staff are valued much higher than what we currently pay them. But again, we are constrained by the job evaluation done by public service and administration.
No, the DG knows that there are discussions going on around those on that evaluation and many of the other things that are going on there. But it's not a subject for us to discuss. But even the matter that you raised around the issue of challenges that are facing drug-free, it's for 4 years that we're raising issues of that nature. And it can't be a medium-term expenditure for the department for 4 years that's been able at least to just sympathize and cry with you and say, hey, Daniel, this is it. I mean, he cries with me when I told him that these are challenges that are there. But at least there should be something that is happening around in addressing those things. But thank you very much, drug-free. I hope you keep the good work up. We are going to check this report and check the present one that is there, and I'm sure this time it's not going to miss in the system. We're going to get it by September. It will be in front of us and then discuss something. But thank you very much for always honoring us and come and give us this impeccable information that is given to us today. I think we can give you if you have some pressing matters, and then we'll remain with other people. And the other thing is that you are going to get the invitation for the budget of the minister on the 1st of July. So that communication will come to you. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much for giving us the space to come and present our report. And I thank the members for the contribution. And you know, we again make an open offer to members who want to visit our offices and see the work we do and know more about what we do. You know, anytime we're willing to host to that office. So thank you very much. And we're going to take the lead. We've got some drug chiefs to
thank you very much, sir. Thank you. That annual report must go straight to Lindy. It must not go to the department again because they put it in the store. It must come straight here. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take.
And then in 2001,
when Minister Mark took over, changes now from the beginning box to South Africa, which was in line with the industrial world and been done to have itself being presented more as a dream than actual boxing, which at the same time again came to help the developer doing away with the provincial committee, because all those times the boxing had its own provincial committee with their chairperson, with the but from then onwards, all the power of boxing was present within boxing, because that is the national office, that is the family. And that led to a whole lot of qualified support, because when it came now to really convening the whole amount of support, every country, the assets coming from all provinces, it came to a point now where a lot of them were lost in the yes, that has been taken care of now, so you will see that yes, we have a qualified support, but other bits and students, that at this point can be not taken off way for the people who really put their money to it. The duty of open government now is to combine the public and publishing statistics and annual reports, which is something that we are doing today at the same time, apologizing for this support. The vision of Bonsoro has changed slightly to a shorter, more precise one, because it came to a situation where board members said that the first one was too long, even staff members or even all other people that could not be able to really catch up to what it was. So the feeling was that even the person who is doing the CEO, the person who is working in the corner of the staff must know the of boxing. It's a well-class responsibility for boxing in a united and safe environment. The united and safe environment are then coming because of the fact that boxing is a contact sport and can be very dangerous, which is why in the first place the boxing act was an effort to make sure that boxing was legislated from Parliament. But if you look at all the compliances that are geared to intelligence towards, during, and after a fight, are much, much more, and a lot of them more complicated than any other sport that you can get. Which is why sometimes you find that there is a very thin line now in terms of understanding whether boxing should be a going concern or not a going concern. Because one of our going concerns has to do with the boxing incident, one of us is not really going concerned, going to go towards the independent and having its own constitution. The key objective to create an organized and regulated environment of professional boxing, design and appropriate structural arrangements for boxing, improve the quality of performance of boxing tournaments, enhance the quality of boxing, develop high performance boxers, and create a living environment for boxing. But now has really been taken up by boxing South Africa, but again it is one that also put us in a situation where we find ourselves actually using or needing more money than we are actually getting from the government. And the question that we have had to answer sometimes is the projects that we are doing in terms of training and development, must we really be doing those projects? And now the answer is we think we should, because as a boxing entity, we have our own social obligation. Because when you come to Parliament, and at the end, when you come to the people on the ground, a development project is really needed to make sure that the theater, that is all the boxers that are coming up, all the promoters that are coming up, and also all the trainers that are coming up are changed so that you can have better teachers of boxing, better event organizers of boxing, and at the same time, better conditions in terms of the profile that we could be, which means now us doing projects and against us not doing projects. We are forced to do projects, because if you don't do projects, it means all you have to do is leave the office and wait for tournaments to happen, which is not really what something that you can do in the machine to
the funds of Boston Consulting come from the amount contributed to us by the government, the fees payable to the in terms of Boston debt, grants, donations, requests made to the income entrance, the plus money invested by the year. That has been proved, but it is not just enough. It would be enough if what we were doing in Boston Consulting was only running tournaments. Because the grant now that would be getting would be for paying staff salary, for paying water and electricity, for paying rent. But unfortunately, we don't do that because we always have to come again to Parliament to explain ourselves, to explain ourselves in terms of how much or what we've done in terms of developing our stakeholders. And when we develop our stakeholders, then we have to need money. Yes, the Boxing Act allows us to get solutions and requests, but something that has not happened before, and that we started last week, all that is needed now is for the board to recommend point one, point two, point three, smooth it up, and then endorse it so that can go. We have gone on a national fund raising that, because we have come to a stage where we believe that we need more money, not necessarily now to depend on the government, right? But for ourselves to go out of the way, our way aggressively to look for time so that we can begin to satisfy all of these programs that we have. We are going to be, once the board now has done all of that, we are going to be able now to launch that funding drive so that we can be on our way to the thing where we may be self-sufficient in no time. The operation of Boxing South Africa is one of the few things that we can be proud of. We may not be proud of our finances, we may not be proud of our policy, but when it comes to what we've been able to achieve, as against what we get to be able to achieve those objectives, it makes us very, very proud. Because out of nothing, we are able to do equally or even better than our biggest competitors, like rugby, like soccer, like cricket, especially in terms of development. Because our development project, especially the one that we have now in the last 4 years, has been aimed at very fast and the development program in South African sports. We have had a successful annual boxing award and convention, and we were hosted by the city government. Why the city government? Simply because we went out of our way to make sure that we are co-opting provincial governments to help us. Sometimes they don't give us money, but to assist us in terms of the assets that we can use in their offices, like halls, like police, like hospitals, security, and all of that. And in this case, we got money to run the awards. It became a big success. And from the convention of 2007, the board and all the stakeholders decided that we must rotate our Boxing Awards and also our convention. And the city government became the first one now to take that. And we are looking now at every other province in terms of what they can pick up so that we can hold them. In terms of the tournament, we had 86 tournaments, and 29 of those tournaments were international fights, which means we have been able to create more opportunities for our boxers, the up-and-coming boxers to be involved in more fights, the champions to stay on their targets. And at the same time, we have created opportunities like never before for our boxers to contest in the international level. Because when you think of international fights, a lot of our boxers international title. We've got 5 world podiums that are operating in South Africa, as we're talking, the WBC, the WBA, the IBF, the IPO, the WBF, especially in that order, in terms of of the assignment and the recognition around the world. And we've been able to create those opportunities as a result. Only last year, in this term, we were able to produce 7 boxers who qualify to be fighting on the military pay-up for some of the organizations. And also for the first time, we had three of our southern Balkans being able to fight for 12 titles at the same time, which is something that we only see on television, or something that we only watch on TV, or read about in newspapers. But now we've been able to create that opportunity for our Balkans and for our producers. We had very good boxing and very good spectacular events, and that was even shown on television in some countries where we had Alexander going to Las Vegas and be involved in a bumper event that was seen worldwide, with Cassius Baloyi and Malcolm Gladwell fighting for, which was one of the biggest fights in Africa for an IBF title. We have Manila, one of the Manila brothers, going overseas to win one of those military fights. We have Big Temple as well, and Kelvin Hayes, development project in South Africa. It has already produced world champions, international champions, and it has been produced now female boxers. Because female boxing is new in South African boxing, and because also legalized in 2001 by the But the main thing there was that while female boxing was legalized in South Africa, there was never a plan to put a fight to say, here is the plan, let's make South African and female boxing career. But now we see amount of money that we're getting from donors and also now from the upstairs from government institutions, we're able to pick that female boxers. So right now we see we've got 21 female boxers in the country. But at the same time, for them to fight, they also depend on the office of boxing South Africa. Because we are managing them from the office to be able to give them fight. With each and every promoter now that is having a day to say, all the day to say to your promoter, give us a female bar, give us two female bars. And it is because of that we're able now to produce international champions when two of them from Israel have won international titles. That is very good title that they're now in the office of two. And in August, they are fighting for fully fledged world titles, I think, world champions from Germany. We're able again to get Tita to come and assist us in terms of capacity, financially, and otherwise, to help our because again, as you are saying, we cannot answer a question that says, should you do development or should you not do development? Our answer is just do it. Again, that is why now we went to the CETA to say, what can you do in terms of making sure that we help the CETA system, we help the people that are down there on the ground working to get the workers up and the CETA. We increase our participation in annual events, and we also invaded the prison. For the first time, we assisted the correctional service to have a national champion of the prison. They have created their own champion, and we're doing it again this year. The main aim of that is to try and get boxing to learn ahead. Then up to end in correctional services, and you are looking at a situation if it can be passed legally, where some of these boxers that are in the correctional services to be able to compete in the national championship and to be able to get into the national team to go for the world championship and the Olympics. Reason simply being a lot of them in the field are mature people who are good in boxing, and they are the same age of the year 25 to 30 and 35. The same age as all the boxers that are coming from the formerly and communist countries where there were no professional boxers, where you would find a boxer with 30 years is coming to the Olympics for the fourth or the fifth time. Yet our boxer at age 18, 19, they turn professional, which means now they don't have that time to stick around to be more experienced and to be also stronger and be more resistant to make them now in a situation where they can be boxers. So in a situation where you have boxers in for the chance, we will not turn professional, but we'll be fighting for the country. We are looking at that situation and the situation that we need to apply for. But program itself is already on its way. In terms of income and expenditure, we have a difficulty. This is coming from the situation that I have explained before, where we got a grant from the Department of Tree overnight. And this was also to help us, because as I said, we were also owing the tax. And we appealed to the department that can you please assist us. And the department helped us with that. So we were able to do that, but our debts are not finished yet. We are looking at the situation where we need some more assistance so that we can be cleared from the red and be able to walk forward. For example, our project, we use 2.2 million for our project. Project only. Project meaning the project of training and developing these stakeholders like so the issue here is 2 million. Our financial report, we are owing 1.820 million. We got 2.1 from the post budget. As a result, we see that the grant is going to be increased because we are paying salaries, right? What I do, but at the same time, with the situation now, why is it 2.1? If we were to pay only those salaries and then the water, it is still not enough. But at the same time, we are also again still committed to do training, to do development. And the situation now is a situation where it should be called for assistance. The positive organogram, we have the organogram and it is fine. At this point, what we need is the chief financial officer. The chief financial officer would have been promised by the department to step on the chief financial officer that will be paid by the department and work. That one is saying the financial officer is really financial controller. The second financial officer helps the design. So the only person now that is there is the financial controller. And then another position that is under the report is the chief of CEO, that is CEO of the design, which has CEO. And as far as everything else, it is really the best for those two. Staff adopted the 2016 policy as well as the evaluation system, which is aligned to equate the youth in past years, has been implemented. It has been implemented, the job alignment system. But again, the staff is still ending less than what it should be in terms of control. In time, it's too early to see the salary increase whatsoever. The staff is actually on the same amount. And this is the situation that the industry board is looking into on the end meeting about that, and we are looking at the kind of applications that we can get and to go a long way. The CA unit is concerned with this block, and because of the financial situation, we got a CFO who was appointed on a temporary basis. But as the combination of state and MC has brought in full attention, in terms of the financing, it is very, very difficult to just keep everything going and change. That's as far as our report. Thank you very much, and the people that are coming up and the
thank you. Hey, it's okay, Dr.
Lutton. I seem to have a problem with my computer. The gentleman, but it would be power is off. You need power from the computer.
Where is the 15th?
don't know.
Honourable members, in the absence of the input from the other members of the boxing, let's get clarity from Joe.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I was actually a bit reluctant to ask the question because Dr. Nibatani asked me to look under the table and show me some boxing gloves. Yeah, Jefferson, I'm a bit inquisitive in terms of the resignation of the CEO. And for the organization of this statute, I would like to know, has there been any exit interview held with the CEO in terms of his contract? And also, you know, I would like to know the reason for his resignation.
Come back, Colin.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. Colin is not, when I do this work, I normally look at what was previous report and compare it to the one which has been given to us. Now, first, if you look at your previous report, you don't actually know that it. You have 88 boxing tournaments. You've got a copy on page 3. Now, on this page here, page 17, they say that record one tournaments increased from 70 to 88. I don't understand because it was 88 in the report of 2006-2007. In the report of 2008, they say it increased. So I'd like you to clarify on that one. And I don't know whether I might take my own bite now for the test. I also want to know what strategies you have in place to, I don't know, there's no place here, Mama. I said 29. That's 28.
Page 28 on this 2008 annual report.
Yes. Your professor boxer, white is only one, colored is one. Now, how do we, what strategy do we have to take this force to those communities as well? Then to give to others, because I just want to check here, because I see there's a lot of things which have been identified also on this one. In your previous report, there were recommendations which were made, a number of them. But if you compare this report and the previous report, very little has been done to improve all the recommendations of the Auditor General. But if I can just go to those things that there are a few. Or let me start to give to other comments and take later.
Just put your recommendation in the order so that when you come back and then you raise those recommendations from 2006-2007 which are overlapping to 2008 annual report.
Okay.
Donat?
Yes, Chairperson. You know, you are the reason for establishing Boxing South Africa. And it seems to me that they don't appreciate those reasons, Chairperson. really they don't appreciate the reasons. Officers were exploited, our promoters were exploited, there was no development, all these things. Those were the promises that we made to the sports people out there, Chairperson. And because of that, we established Boxing South Africa. I've been in this committee since 1994. This was established in 2002 and 2001, Boxing South Africa. I was part of the establishment of Boxing South Africa, Chairperson. And it has led me down, not only me, Chairperson, the boxers, you, everybody, it has let us down every single year. Cora, I make Cora and Cora, yeah, we're Tommy Jeffers,
yeah, no,
that's
okay.
How we speak.
No, no, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Cora mentioned a few things, Jefferson. The fact that, you know, we talk about these things every year. The same thing. Sometimes the presenters, they're just a different presenter. But the facts are still the same, Chairperson. I want to implore the Director General to really have a serious look at Boxing South Africa and how to get Boxing South Africa out of the ground. The presenter wants to know, is this a going concern? A going concern means, does this thing work? It does not. And the reason why it does not work is because we don't implement recommendations. It is as simple as that. And it's simple things, my friend. Simple, simple things. And I think the time has come that we must really be straight and frank. You know, in the past, I was also very frank. And the chairperson knows me. I was frank when it came to Boxing South Africa and the way they operate. I think the time has come that once they must realize that they've let us down badly, chairperson. And they must. In fact, they must stop waiting our time, Chairperson. And must stop waiting the time of the sports people, the boxers of South Africa, Chairperson. No, there's so much that can be said and asked on this, Chairperson. I really don't want to go into all the details. But that is, I'm frustrated, Chairperson.
Come back to the presentation of Demons. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apology for being late. As we move along, Chairperson, I'm sure I'm trying to get hold of the situation in boxing. I would thought that more information will be provided on the presentation that I've given. First and foremost, I must say that I could not follow quite quickly on the presentation because the gentleman was speaking to something else and I was trying to catch up on what he was referring to.
Yeah, he was speaking on the summary that he has made, drawn out of this annual report. But that document will be available to you. So that was the only shortcoming that was there. But he was presenting the annual report and the challenges that were in the annual report. And but in a very short summary. I think there are documents that Corey will distribute so that it, you can follow now everything what the gentleman presented.
The second aspect, Chairperson, I'm not sure whether it's the president or not in terms of the CEO, the resignation of the CEO. I think also in this document, I'm not sure whether they are referring to Mungi Kumalo. If they can elaborate how much was he not paid, what are the reasons, secondly, what is the term of office of a CEO, so that we understand maybe this contract was not renewed, was he frustrated? We need to be a little bit much more open. The other issue, Chairperson, I just read on this document because I could see that in terms of the Auditor General's report, there is a weakness in having supportive documents to their financial statement. I am not sure whether do they accept or admit that they don't have the administrative capacity in tracking down documents that will substantiate their spending pattern for the end of a financial year or what is it. Because I would want to refuse to say that the Auditor General always raised the matter repeatedly. Not unless I can get a convincing argument to say no, it is not so, but because of this. The last point, Chairperson. For instance, just to make a rider on the matter, they spoke of 57,000. I'm trying to catch up on what has been raised here, 56,000 rand. That relates to areas, I don't know whether it's salaries or whatever. And there are no supportive documents to that effect. What could be the cause of that? Because I don't want to draw a wrong assumption that because the CEO was not paid, then it is paid. So can I just be assisted in that regard? Thank you, Chair.
Can the box respond to those, and then we'll take another bite.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the resignation of the CEO. The CEO, we had a meeting on the Saturday, which was on the 6th of the day, and a normal board meeting, and everything was no problem. And the Tuesday thereof, we received an SMS that he is intending to resign from Boxing South Africa. And I made an appointment to see him, which was on the 8th, to actually find out what is the problem, because we just had a meeting, it never came up at the meeting. And as part of our discussion, he just mentioned that there was frustrated and he didn't feel comfortable anymore, and that the organization was not financially going anywhere. And in the process, we've been engaging him, and ultimately we had a meeting where he was supposed to come, and which unfortunately he never came to that meeting. And then SNS that he was giving us an opportunity to discuss matters in his absence, and that was it. So the board was mandated, part of the board was mandated to meet him, which was on the 4th. So we met him, and one of the reasons, he placed four reasons. One of the four reasons is that he was tired of presiding over a financially looking at an ongoing concern. And secondly, he didn't feel like the board had embraced him, and then he was looking for other options. But he said to him, all the problems that were there don't seem to be unsurmountable, and he agreed. And he actually, we even had a staff meeting with him to say we're working on this issue, which was on the 4th. And he said, give me time, let me look at some of the other arrangements I've been trying to make and see if I can get out of it. So what had happened is that we gave him the 2 days that he requested, but as it happened that day, he never came back to us as a board, but he wrote, I think, that into the media that he was resigning, and I actually wrote him a letter that I'm disappointed that he's writing to the media about his resignation, whether he's supposed to come back to us as a board on the proposal that we made. And until then, he had left the office. We were supposed to have had a press conference, a joint press conference with him as a board, which he at the last moment, he pulled out of it. But details today, he has said, he claimed that at the days when he had written a letter of the intention to resign, he didn't think in his mind and in his book that he was already saving his resignation, irrespective of the discussions that we've been having. So that's what he left, and apparently he has already reported that he won another job. But what distressed us afterwards, when he left, he suddenly was attacking the board in the media and other places of things that he never mentioned to the board. So as a board, he never gave us an opportunity to have an exit at the time. So, but the department, through the minister through the department, has sent out someone to have an exit interview on the media. I just received it. I have to respond. I don't know if that will be adequate on the.
I would like to add on that. Unfortunately for me, I have a written document because I was part of the team that went to request the CEO to remain with Boxing South Africa. These are the reasons that Mr. Khumalo cited. We would want to put them for the Honorable Portfolio Committee to look at and be able to assess them independently of what the media has said about them. Mr. Khumalo believes that he has not been seeing eye to eye with the board on government issues. He cites, among others, the failure of the board to approve performance agreements and DSA strategic plan. One, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, I want to indicate in support of Dr. Ngatane and the board here that there was never any animosity between the board and Mr. Khumalo for the better part of his stay in Boxing South Africa. I'm not talking about the last days. I'm talking about the better part of his stay. In fact, even the issue of a performance agreement, I'm employed where I am employed. I have a performance agreement. I initiate my performance agreement. Honorable Suga knows I report to Mr. Makena in the same case. I prepared my performance agreement for Mr. Makena to approve. I can't resign from my work because Mr. Makena has refused to sign my performance agreement. It is indeed true that I have a responsibility to initiate my performance agreement. Mr. Khumalo himself had a responsibility to initiate his performance agreement and to get his performance agreement signed. We don't have a single letter where Mr. Khumalo wrote a letter to the board seeking to say, you are failing to approve my performance agreement. We only hear it on this last day when he is already employed elsewhere. The strategic plan, we have, in fact, even on the performance agreement, we have made several inputs. I remember making three on a number of interactions with him, positively, interacting with him freely as a colleague. Then, finally, on the matter of the strategic plan, in the vision that Mr. Mungia read here for the board is part of the strategic plan that we approved in Islanda. How we have no strategic plan that is not approved, I still do not understand. Then the second reason that he cites is that he is tired of presiding over a non-going concern organization. This is surprising, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Committee, because that's what Mr. Khumalo was employed to do. He was employed by Boxing South Africa in order to assist in making Boxing South Africa a going concern. The truth, if I can take the Honorable Committee back, you will remember that when Advocate Dalimbofu took over the chairperson of Boxing South Africa, we started losing. Immediately after the departure of Mthobi Kyamzate, we began losing a number of sponsorships. Mthobi Kyamzate was working for Vodacom, and Vodacom was supporting boxing a lot. And when his term of office came to an end, and the Honorable Minister could not renew his contract, Vodacom decided to terminate their relationship with Boxing South Africa. We and probably one or two other sponsorships. We then said, we have Mr. Mungia, who is knowledgeable about boxing in Boxing South Africa. We now need a CEO who is going to net money for Boxing South Africa. When we settled on Mr. Bongani Khumalo, we settled on a person who, as explained in the interview, was skillful, who would bring money to Boxing South Africa. Unfortunately, it never happened. And when he resigned because Boxing South Africa is not a going concern. In fact, that's what we employed him to do, to make Boxing South Africa a going concern, of course, with our support. In his view, he's finding it difficult to work with unhappy members of staff whose salaries have not been reviewed since 2006. The truth is that is related to money.
and unfortunately Bokong South Africa did not have money. Mr. Phumalo also believes that the current board has never embraced him. I have already answered that, that in my view and in the view of the board, we have embraced Mr. Phumalo. In fact, we supported him for the better part of his work in Bokong South Africa. Even on the last day, when he was saying there are 2 days to go, we went to him in order to say we would want you to stay on because we believe that the challenges that we have are challenges that we are not insurmountable. The reality is there is a proper saying which is to say the more burdensome the challenges are, finger pointing begins. I think in Bokong South Africa we have reached that stage. Because of the financial challenges that we are in, we are now beginning to pointing fingers as to who is right, who is wrong, and who is wrong. But as the board, we would want to request the portfolio committee to assist us through this difficult time. I was honorable chair, trying to add on Dr. Ngatane and reading from the document because we have sat with Mr. Bongani Khumalo seeking to request him to stay on. If it was according to us and our aspiration, we would have requested him successfully to remain with Bokong South Africa. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair, there are some questions.
My question goes to the doctor Ngatane. He's telling us about the first day of Anya when they first received the SMS telling them that the CEO is about to resign. They had a meeting previously, but he's not giving us the content of the meeting. Because in my understanding, no one could just, after a meeting, decide to resign without having conflict or whatever. But then I would request the chairperson, this is the chairperson, to provide us with the content of that meeting. Secondly, Mr. Sodo is raising a letter that is, he is claiming that is from the CEO. I'm not sure whether I want to subscribe to accepting the letter or what. My fear is a situation whereby we listen to a letter and then the author is not here. I would therefore suggest that if we are to listen or take that into consideration, we might as well call who the CEO to be part of the meeting so that we hear the story from both sides. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Stella. Comrade Stella?
Hello, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to go to a route prematurely for a commission to check the pros and cons of the validity of this resignation. But surely to me, an impression is created that there was a problem. Because you take it from what has been raised, that the CEO was fed up, you know. He was fed up. So surely there was a build-up towards that fed up, up to a point that when the climax was reached, he decided, even after that meeting, that no, we can't meet. I mean, we can't smoothen our relations. Hence, the departure. Very clumsily through an SMS, the intention. So I'm saying, Chairperson, surely, because also the letter, I'm not sure whether it's co-signed by both parties, but I'm saying that I would like to take that route as of now, prematurely. You will decide. But I'm just glad to get one side of the story as to the reasons why the former CEO has resigned, as claimed or read by the letter. So I'm saying that thus far I'm satisfied. Maybe at our own time, we will have to interrogate and look at the way the letters and the responses thereof. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. I think I need to clarify what has been said. Firstly, the part of the letter that Mr. Sodo is reading is not a letter. It's a minute of the meeting that the committee that was mandated by the board to go and meet Mr. Khumalo. So he has a copy, it's a minute.
But the
so that you could hear the other story. Whether it was a letter, and then we say, here is a letter that has been written, and then this letter talks about Bongani Kumalo, it's not here. They're not, it's not a difference. Maybe then we'll just accept that he made a reference to a letter. Okay, it's not a letter, but it's a minute. That a minute are given to, the content of the minutes are given to the committee by Mr. Soto in the absence of Mr. Kumalo, as a complete stellar thing.
I accept it. The other aspect is that the meeting that you're talking about was the normal board meeting that was held. It was not a separate meeting, it was a normal board meeting that was being conducted by Boxing South Africa as part of its mandate. So it was not just a separate meeting addressing Mr. Bongani Kumalo's. So it was just a normal board meeting, which was on a Saturday and on a Tuesday thereof. That's why, and the resignation part of it was that he did put it on a letter to say intention to resign. So it was not only on an SMS.
Jonah.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Can you press the...
As you say, my name is Tamsang Achi Jonah. Background is that in 2001-2, I was the chairperson of this professional board under the different name. And I've got to say, it gives one pride when to get Dr. Tutola as emotional as they are with boxing. We are sure that our sport is in the right hand, where people need to answer questions, that they need to ask questions without any fear or worry. Now, let me try and go back to respond to the questions which have been asked. Why did Ubongani Kumalo resign? Which is a very fair question. And considering the leadership that Dr. Natale, that we will refuse to respond to his utterances through the media and through the papers and everything, we will hold steadfast to say when time comes that we need to respond, we will respond as we are doing. Because now, to us, this is beyond individual. It has got to do with the Portfolio Committee of Sport in this country. It has got to have been a bearing on the Ministry of Sport in this country, together with the President. And therefore, we are not going to be handling the issue in a rough manner. When I'm putting my head on the block, which I could be told that I'm out of order. Oh, Mr. Kumalo Venable from Boston. Now, if you get employed, you are given a job description. These are the things you are going to do. And if the time comes, you can see month in, month out, you are not able, despite the support of your board and other professionals, at some stage or other, you need to make an exit message. So that now you could, as Uba Mushoga has said, point fingers to other stakeholders or your board. But the question of boxing, professional boxing in this country, is on two legs. It's either this one or this one. For example, at some stage when there was a chairperson, you had an office which was very strong. And you had a board which was equally very strong. Therefore, there would have been a conflict. You cannot help that. As you move on, you find that one of these two offices will either be weak or strong. We've got a strong board. Despite the fact that we've got vacancies of almost more than 50% vacancy, we are keeping the boxing in this country running, and that we don't have averagely 50 weekends of the year we bought boxing in this country.
Very successful boxing.
Now, these duties, corner and central to them, the DJ, will support me, the sponsorship. So that now, every coming from stage to say we are going to give you 8% increment or whatever, you have done the following. But then now, the individual support to the CEO seems not to be worth it. I mean, he, I understand he comes from the Free State where I come from, which I also, like, babysitted him to say, Tatu Bongan, do you have a challenge? And another thing for us to support him, Chairperson, has been the fact that at some stage you were the under category of disabled people. That's why we pray, it was a pride for us to be saying we've got, when it comes to HR issues, a CEO who is disabled, whom we are pushing and support. The strength of the CEO determines the success of this board, of which one would have said, okay, these things were not coming at that time. So I mean, in conclusion, I'm saying, Babu Suga, we supported him at four angles without any fear. Because even the fact that now we were staying at the board, we refused that he should resign. Because now that may hit back on us, just to say, did we not do what we were supposed to do, or we did not know what he did not know, and we did not know? That is why we were saying the chairperson of the board has got to go to him and say, what issues are insurmountable, which we can sit here and say, there's nothing really we wouldn't have solved if he would not have told us.
Before I come back to this, I just want to know that there was a fight sometime, I can't remember, where the one boxer had this cement or something, and this other boxer was sitting very badly. I'd like to hear from boxing about what had happened to that match. Remember that one?
I remember it very well. Can I go to the chairperson and respond?
No, wait, I remember that question.
The other issue, Comrade, I just want to bring to your attention these recommendations and then what is the response of the Auditor General. The first recommendation is that the board did not actively contribute towards the function of accounting, information, management systems, personal operations, monitoring and internal and external audits. Anti-evaluation. The board did not ensure that there are mechanisms in place to monitor and review operations and programs. The entity does not work closely with the executive authority. The entity does not appropriately assign authority and delegate responsibility to the proper personnel to deal with organizational goals and objectives. Management does not fully endorse the use of performance based management. Risk assessment. The entity does not have risk assessment plans and strategy as well as control structure to address those risks identified. Management does not comprehensively identify risks using various methodologies as appropriate. Adequate mechanisms do not exist to identify risks pertaining to the ability to continue as a going concern. Control activities. The following root causes gave rise to various shortcomings pertaining to control activities. Performance measures and indicators. The entity has not established and monitored performance measures and indicators. Valuable assets and information are not safeguarded from unauthorized assets, use or financial duties. Segregating of duties, key duties and responsibilities are not divided or segregated among different people to reduce the risk of error, waste, or fraud. Appropriate policies and procedures do not exist for all the entity activities. No performance evaluations performed. Documentation is not readily available and records are not properly managed and maintained. Controls identified as necessary are in place but are not being applied. The entity does not effectively manage its workforce and do not have an overall human resource strategy. monitoring control. Data recorded by information and financial system are not periodically compared with physical assets and disturbances are not being investigated. Material non-compliance with applicable legislation, like OPFMA, thousands of things. Now there's the auditor general saying, yes. The prior year's external audit recommendations have been substantially implemented, that's a question. The answer is no. Now, let us go to this money, because there are monies which Comrade says that they are in need of money. As a receivable, there's 333,743 rand, which is owed to the entities by promoters. Now, why can't we collect that money so as to have money in our kitty? There is another amount of 56,667, which is not accounted for. Now, and there is going to go in concern. There is a deficit of 2 million. Now, with all this money, with all this which was recommended at the year 2006-2007, we get the report 2008, we are still where we were. Why could we not improve on this? This would have given us a better view. Because if one recommends and advises you, why don't you take the advice?
I just want to make a statement that honorable members must say this thing very honestly. Do you think this exercise in the absence of the man in charge of boxing, who is the chief operation officer, the CEO, is it going to help us to talk to the board on this matter? Just need a simple, honest view. Because let me tell you what it was doing. All those things that I think that we ourselves have done on 2006-2007. This committee has taken a conscious decision, a certain skin cap. I don't know who can confess, from the Auditor General's office. Sat with us and boxing here for the whole day up until in the evening at 9 o'clock. We were saying to the Office of the Auditor General, DG, what are the things that you recommend that the Boxing South Africa must go and do so that in 2008, in their annual report, and they should not have unqualified report, he has given us all those things, they are there, those things. Not even one of those things that he has made a recommendation about, the meetings that he supposed he was ready to have with Boxing South Africa. And it is not the board that's supposed to do it. It is the COO of Boxing South Africa supposed to do that. And the department was here that day. Norma? Yes. You remember when we were sitting at G26 with a certain Sitienka and trying to help Boxing South Africa around this matter? Not even a single day has this committee waived in giving support to Boxing to help Boxing to go out of this. We even called the Office of the Auditor General, and they gave us two gentlemen. One of them was Mr. Tim Kapu, saying, I'm in charge of boxing in the Auditor General's office. And then we asked him a very pertinent question. Mr. Tim Kapu said, to those fruitless expenditure, one of the things that he said, to those fruitless expenditure, they have to write a report and say, these are fruitless expenditure they've been occurring from this year and this year, and therefore we can't recover those, and the Auditor General will condone to. That's what he was saying, one of those. Norma, if I'm right, it's one of the things that he has given an advice to them. But Boxing South Africa didn't deem it fit that whilst you are going through a pain in helping Boxing South Africa, it's a shame when you go there as the chair and people say that you have unqualified report, Boxing South Africa. And it's continued 2006, 2007, 2008, this is 9. I can tell you now, you must go and see the other report that is going to come. It's still going to be unqualified report. Now, we are now asking somebody who's acting
Loiso about this thing, and then he's not going to give us answer because Loiso was part of the group of people who were here when we seek to assist Boxing South Africa to go out of this program. You see, honourable members, we must be frank and honest to ourselves and to boxing. Boxing has no leadership. It's just a board there that has no guts to say things should go this way, and the COO had to run away from all the problems that are there. There is no leadership in boxing. Number of resignations that have been going on in boxing, we were watching what is going on there in boxing with great concern. But I just want to ask several questions. The extent of the department assisting boxing from all these other issues, what was it? I don't know, there's one member of your board was very eloquent from Buffalo City. I said he's not going to leave up until now, and definitely I don't see him yet. I don't know what is it, but there was another little person who was disturbing me, his attitude, who was a member of the board. I don't know what is it, but I said to him that day, I don't think you live up to the end of this board. And it's gone. It's gone. You remember the South gentleman was a little bit cheeky that day. Short one. Coming from Buffalo City, ne? Yeah, from Buffalo City, was part of you people. But the other thing, TG, before you respond on that, there are people who have been suspended in the department that the board has brought them back to work. On what capacity did the board take that decision? When the CEO is supposed to take that decision? That is, those people who are suspended and their matter is still going on, and then they had to come back. I just want to know when the board took that decision. One thing that the Auditor General raised, which no one knows, the Auditor General raised in his annual report was that other members of the board, it's not a joke. The letter that that man raised and say members of the board are spending 400,000 rand per member. It's not a joke. It's not true. It's true. It's something that the Auditor General has raised as a concern when he was doing individual assessments on this thing. But the members of the board do not want to talk about those things. The members of the board do not want to accept that they don't have a leadership. It's just a board that stays there and then it doesn't fulfill its mandate in terms of the Constitution and in terms of the Boxing Act. And that we must accept. It's a fate that all of us have to sit with it, and then it is true. It's a painful truth. And I think today we must live with that truth. Gigi, the extent in which you have helped Boxing South Africa to go out of this problem, we have played our part, I can tell you that. We have organized and written a letter to the Auditor General's head office. He has sent people to us. We sat down with Boxing South Africa for the whole day up until in the evening at 6 o'clock. No one wanted to go home. I told him that it's not going anywhere up until we finalize this thing. But Boxing South Africa has gone again back to that situation. What is it that we should do ourselves in helping Boxing South Africa to go out of this? And I just want to know, how did the department assist Boxing South Africa to go this? Because now there's no need, member. We must accept this and put a report to Parliament, but interacting with people who are acting like Hollywood and don't take responsibility, it's a useless exercise. And I think after the DG must close this meeting, and then we'll make a report to Parliament, and that should be the end of the whole thing.
Thank you, Chief Honourable Member. You would recall probably from last year's annual report department itself that the department provided additional funding without Treasury approval to assist Boxing to achieve the kind of turnaround that it needed. At the time, the problem was largely the diagnosis. To appoint the necessary critical staff
way, of course, this year we project again that there will be significant shortfalls on the budget of boxing for Africa. You've already in the past the AD and Treasury kind of punished the department for assisting. There's no way in which the department can do so unless it's budgeted for. Treasury previously got into King to help to increase the allocation to boxing for Africa. We will again make a submission for the current cycle of the NTSF. But it's still up to Treasury to make that decision. I've asked Boxing South Africa when I started to give me a 3-year projection of income and expenditure, essentially in order for us to begin to cost the isolated statutory obligation in order to make sure that we fund boxing in order to do what is required in terms of the act. I've received that. That will be a basis that I will use to engage Treasury, if indeed we can, going forward in the 2010-2011 financial year, get further funding. I'm a bit concerned because, on the one hand, if the issue of funding is so crucial, and sponsors for a number of years have dried up, and some of the sponsors who were giving boxing for that money before, like Old Buck, tobacco companies and so on, I don't think they perhaps as strong as they were before, they would argue to come back and give the same sponsors. So I think there needs to be a very deliberate effort to build an alternative sponsorship base. I've had discussions.
I appreciate your greatest humane advice, but nobody will put money to an entity that doesn't exist. You look at the leadership of the both of the board and the CEO and say, here, I can invest money, its return are going to be right. Nobody will put money to Boxing South Africa. There is no leadership in Boxing South Africa. We must accept that fate.
No, I accept that, of course, success breeds success, and so until we get the situation turned around. But nevertheless, what I'm trying to say, there are possibilities apart from us looking at maximize income, through our allocation in order to meet the statutory obligation. A bit of a more long term. I've also discussed with Lotto to see, my understanding is that currently they only support boxing for the development of the daily chance for. But I've raised the question with Lotto as to the possibility of supporting some of the other administration and statutory ones. Chairperson, of course, we've also continued to grapple with how we could bring some personnel on board. When I realized the extent of the problems, I asked the minister for permission to approve that we appoint the personnel contract and to second the person to Boston, at least manage the financial part of it. Unfortunately, the minister felt that isn't going to solve the problem. Only a short-term solution, we needed a much more longer-term intervention. So that initiative I had to put on hold. I've since again asked that let's rather in the short-term create a more permanent post in order to make provisions for us to have a more longer-term solution to the problem of management of the finances. The long and the short of it is we started to ask ourselves the question, whether some of the problems that we see can be overcome. I mean, obviously, I've gone back and I've started to look at also the history. And, Chairperson, I'm sure you, the members of this committee, will be a lot more familiar with the history, not only of boxing for that, but also its predecessor, the commission. And many of the problems seem to be recurring. I think the boxing for Africa was established to resolve some of the problems that the commission experienced. And so we're asking the question whether we should not begin to look at an alternative model. We've discussed that with the minister. We've not engaged with boxing, but certainly we thought that we'll put some task team in place to look.
looked at best practices elsewhere, particularly in other developing countries, to see if there is a different way of regulating boxing nationally. That proposal this week came back from the minister, and we hope to proceed to appoint two experts to do some quick research rather than to have a task, because you know that boxing South Africa was in fact born out of the previous boxing that a former minister initiated. So, medium term, we hope that there would be a model emanating from the work of these two people that the minister wants to appoint. In the short term, of course, we've got to arrest the problem that's currently before us. I've just, since the resignation, I've just been contacting the chair to have the discussion to see in the short term what it is that we should do. In addition, of course, I've already indicated my discussions with Lotto to see if we can increase the other efforts from Lotto by minister and assistant in the short term, and to proceed on the issue of appointing the CFO and contract on our establishment and to secondment to boxing and more community.
Thank you.
No,
thank you,
TJ.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, we respect and we accept the guidance we get from the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Portfolio Committee. But there are certain facts, Honorable Chair, which must be undertaken in this meeting. The truth, Honorable Chair, is there is no member of staff that was suspended and suspension lifted by a board member. The board member referred to in the media is myself. I am prepared, Honorable Chair, that if the DG is given a task to investigate this matter currently and question whomever possible, I am honestly saying to you, he will arrive at the finding that Ms. Wu Vumani was her suspension was lifted by the CEO on his volition. The truth, Honorable Chair, is it is impossible for a single member of the board to instruct the CEO. The truth is there are other members of the board. When there is an instruction that is motivated by personal interest, there are other members of the board that can correct that person. I just wanted to clarify that. I must come back to this matter of 400,000 on a check. Where would a single member of the board have 400,000 to spend when we are in this financial climate? At a time when Advocate Dalimbov was the chairperson of the board, I was tasked to be the chair of training and development. And I was tasked, therefore, because it was a time when the Baby Champs project was a pilot. I was tasked to go around with Mr. Mungia to attend all the tournaments and give reports to the board. If that there was a problem, in fact, the procurement processes were handled by the office. They were not handled by me. Not a cent came to me. Cars were hired, flights were booked, hotel accommodation was booked for myself, for Mr. Mungia. But the truth is, there was no 400,000 that was spent in 1 year, Honorable Chair, to one person. Then again, Honorable Chair, the matter that must be clarified in this meeting is this matter of emphasis of matter. The Honorable Member reads from perhaps 06-07 financial year and reads a string of matters that were to be corrected. The fact that in this financial year, Honorable Chair, are two indicates that those matters have been attended to. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm doing that with respect.
Yeah. I will show a litany of more than two things that the Auditor General speaks about in this report. The new report. Let me just quickly
other council members of Parliament have to put the glaring fact as it is. The matters that have been raised in 2006-2007,
2008. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In the research document that all of you are having, member states, you check from page 43, you check another page 43, you check another page 43. You check page 44, you take page 44, 45, and then you go up to, up to 45 and 47. Then you will see that even now the Auditor General raises more rain than it has been before. Now, I don't have to go to that level because we will raise them as they are. And SARS are a serious breach of the law of unauthorized expenditure. Unauthorized expenditure in terms of the PFMA is a criminal offense. That Boxing South Africa is sitting on it doesn't do anything about it. Suka, I'm closing this matter.
In support of what you're saying. Because we can sit here the whole day. It's a pity that we stand off as a person with the documents now. But surely, when you speak of the Auditor General's report in certain clauses, it must give a signal to the Boxing South Africa that there is a challenge. Because the Auditor General is not sitting as him as a person. He does have his collective with respect to your documents. So I'm saying first, and also the matter that has been disputed to be corrected, I would want us to respond in the manner which the member from Boxing South Africa is doing. Well, surely, I don't think he has caught our understanding of what has been raised here correctly, because he might be responding to something else that we don't refer to. But surely, there are things that we want to refer to directly from this document of theirs. You know, for instance, in my little understanding, though I'm a little bit late, it's my first time in this committee. If you talk of the fruitless expenditure, that amounts to $500,000, and yet you don't have supporting documents in terms of the lines of accountability, what does that mean to us? So surely there's a challenge in that regard. Two, he might be speaking for himself, but I'm not sure whether all board members of Boxing South Africa are here, so that we don't speak of a person who's absent in relation to what they have responded to as point number two. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I would not want us to delve into that matter. The meeting is yours. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the members are taking a position that we accepted the annual report of Boxing South Africa SAD, and then in the minutes that are going to come to the committee will make recommendations. But how many meetings did the minister have with the Boxing Board? How many meetings did you have with the CEO in trying to have the board? I don't understand this. Maybe we are pushing something that other people are not interested in, because if there is no political will in the department, then it's a futile exercise, because the interaction of political head and the board is crucial. It can't be us who have to call the Auditor General out of the office to come and do work, and then because we are concerned about the state of affairs in Boxing South Africa. It should be the minister who is in charge of the department. The minister is not in charge of the department. Can you tell me how many times have they ever had an interaction with the Boxing Board on matters of the running of the board?
Thanks. I will have to come back to you on the question of the frequency of the meetings between the board and the minister. Maybe the board will know. You will recall that the board reports directly to the minister and not through the director general. I've met with the board when I started, and the oversight function within the department is performed by the chief director responsible for plan liaison management and so on, and as I said, the fellow as well. And there's regular, fairly regular interaction Other than that, we, you know, on an ongoing basis, we wanted the phone, I spoke a number of times to check it. And as I've indicated, the issues that we face definitely come through some of the dialogue that we've had. But boxing is an independent entity. But be quite willing to assist in this question.
Chair of boxing, can you just out of your little record, how many meetings did you have with the minister?
We only had one meeting with the minister.
In the financial year.
On the 22nd of August of this year. And that was the first time that we met in the existing appointment. But in terms of that, the meeting that we had, the minister has mandated us to see in all our meetings for presenting the number of things that he was taking. So we've been having the meetings where he has already been there.
You can't answer that one. Don't answer it so that much problem. Mrs. Ellison, in those meetings, the extent of helping you through the office of the minister, what is the extent of helping you in all the challenges that you are facing? Because if he's sent by that office, the high office, where immediately when he leaves out of the meeting, he goes there, he goes and tells the authority, and those issues that you are raising, either they are turned down or they are implemented. The extent in which you see the presence of Mrs. Boshila there yield better results is just as good as she was not be there.
I would say that it's very helpful.
Honourable members, thanks for the meeting. The department and DG, you just want to say something? Okay.
Chairperson, I do understand that this meeting didn't go as expected and things are not there as good as expected. And I would like, on behalf of the board and yourself, to appreciate the truthfulness and the concern which you have on the spot, and I would like us, on behalf of the board, to apologize if in any way that it came out as otherwise, other than respectful or otherwise. And I do believe that whatever concerns are coming out in terms of the spot, you will rectify, and I hope and I believe in terms of this portfolio will not be disappointed in our performance.
Thank you. Thank you. DG, I think ourselves and the department will have to have a business talk later, so that in other entities that are in the department, this thing must not happen. We must assist this people. But we'll talk about that. And it's going to be how we're going to conduct business all the time. The president of the ANC and the president of the country is requesting even us as chair that in 6 months' time, if we can't make a change, that boxing should be an entity that all of us would associate and enjoy and be proud of. I must go away. Then there must be another person who says be competent and to run this chair and make boxing to be something ideal that all of us would wish to. It's not going to be easy 5 years. And he's not joking with us. And I think we're not going to be hostile to anybody. But we're going to talk about hard facts and ask people to come. And we're not going to give people a year to come back. Other members, we're going to have our quarterly reports with the department, with money or with no money. On quarterly reports, and then the department will come here with other people that are responsible for that. And we must start nipping it on the bud. The first quarter is expired, and then we're going to the second quarter. As soon as we're through with the budget, they've been spending money. They will be coming here so that we begin to interact with them in a very constructive way, rather than just in a manner in which we have been doing this. It's not going to be business as usual, unfortunately. Honourable members and all our visitors, you are invited to the second floor on the new wing and for food there, and then members, I would like you to do it quickly. o'clock, the president is answering questions there. Zuki or some committee for it. All the members that visited us, they must arrange for them if they want to go up there to the gallery for president to reply, and then they must get access up there. Thank you very much.